Welcome to the Partial Durations podcast. I'm Matthew Lorenzon, and I'm joined here by the composer Michael Bakanchev, whose piece Skyjammer was performed at the recent Metropolis New Music Festival. The Melbourne Symphony Orchestra gave a great performance of this piece as part of the CYBEC 21st Century Composers Program. The theme of the festival was music inspired by the city. One thing that was driven home to me at the festival was how orchestral music has reflected changing attitudes towards cities. For instance, pieces written by baby boomers from the 1970s to the 1990s depicted towering skyscrapers in a very positive light as beacons of the economic prosperity that their generation was by and large enjoying. Skyjammer presented the cityscape in a very different light. It's dark, gritty. Let's just listen to the opening flourish of Skyjammer. Thank you very much for joining me today, Michael.
Thanks, Matthew. That's a beautiful introduction, I must say.
There's something so distinctive about that flourish. It's such a dark sound. How did you put that together?
The concept of cities doesn't really gel well with my style, if you like, which is very much drawn from cultural heritage, which is, you already know, is Macedonian. The very first musical ideas that I started writing. I was watching Daredevil and I'm sort of into it, but I wasn't thinking about that and the correlation between that and music, because I was thinking about the Macedonianism and how I can connect it. And, you know, I sat down at the computer and I wrote, you know, like I was around 5 minutes worth of musical material based on, you know, bouncy rhythms, chains of twos and threes, that sort of thing. I said, I know that tomorrow when I wake up and I listen to this again and go through it again, I'm going to hate it. And that's exactly what happened, right? So then I, from time to time, come back to it. And I just thought, just start with a bang. I thought, start with a bang and come out of it somehow and let it just evolve naturally, I think, is probably the word that I would say, evolve naturally, yeah. Because there was no structure to it.
And so out of this bang, some material arises or is revealed.
Purely inspired or ripped off from Anthony Bateris's, I think, his Fragile Absolute, I think his piece he wrote for the NM Symphony Orchestra.
Tell me more about this texture.
Well, there's this that work that I just mentioned by Anthony, which has the, I'm not sure if it's exactly that piece or not. So forgive me, Anthony, if you are listening to this. But it's one of the pieces.
I should point out there's a family link,
Anthony,
here, isn't there?
Yeah. Anthony's, we are related. And I only discovered that after Melbournean flautist Lena Adanovska, who's Macedonian, said to me one day, oh, you're Macedonian, that's so cool. You should check out Anthony Pateris' music. Is, you know, he's sort of Macedonian as well. I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I'll check it out too. I brought it up with, I think, my mum or my auntie, and she said, oh, yeah, we're related. He's your cousin. I was like, oh, God, are you kidding me? He's like, yeah, his parents were over at my house last night for dinner. It's like that. I was like, oh, damn it. So anyway, so I'm reading this score of his, and I'm listening along with the music, and I just really, really liked he had all these septuplet rhythms that perhaps started on, like, the second quaver or semi-quaver of that septuplet, and I really liked that.
And it continues, you use it a lot throughout this piece. It's sort of the thread that links all of the different textures around it.
The main sort of germ that this all came from, and I think it's still in all my, like, edit bits, it just came from this 9/8 feel with a subdivision of it was subdivided in chains of, like, twos and threes, so it was I really liked it. I really drew from it, and that was probably the only real Macedonian sort of thing that I could come, that I could draw from to make this, to create this whole piece. So that, and the fact that this two-note theme is in the major seconds apart as opposed to like a semitone part. And the reason for that is because of the modality of folk music, and that it will have like the lowered seventh leading to the tonic sort of thing. So that's the reason for that. And
so there's this Macedonian modal thread just moving through the city, this hulking, dirty, smoking city. It's incredible sound you build up around it.
Thanks.
Yeah. You workshopped this a bit with your composition teacher, Elliot Geiger.
Yes.
What was his feedback?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. My working title was Burke. Elliot said he was listening to the MIDI playback, and he said, it's really cool, I like it. I don't know if Burke really suits this. I was like, well, I don't, you know, it's just a working title. He's like, I get it, but maybe you want to rethink it. And I said, well, I don't really know where to go from here. And he said, it kind of just reminds me of all this like post-apocalyptic, neo-noir, futuristic sort of wasteland city thing. And he gave me the coolest homework assignment that anyone has ever given me and I will probably ever have for the rest of my life. He said, go home and on the weekend just watch, you know, Blade Runner and watch 2001 A Space Odyssey and just, you know, just watch all these films. And I was like, well, if I have to, you know, this is for, you know, this is, you know, serious work here, so. And I think I did get some inspiration from all that sort of thing.
So once you had that extra inspiration, how did you work that back into this draft that you'd already made? I'm always interested in composition as a problem-solving process.
Yeah. One of the first things that I came across was this two-note theme that happened that emerges out of the sort of flurry at the beginning of the work. I guess I just treated it like a standard, the run-of-the-mill standard orchestration textbook thing, which is have, you know, the highest instrument at the top and work down from that, basically. And so for me, I had the flute as where the oboe is currently in the final form of the piece. It was actually switched with the flute, so the flute was higher than the oboe. So the oboe is higher than the flute at this point. I didn't really know how it was going to sound in real life. And when we got to the workshop with certain individual members from the MSO, their oboe player, I asked him the question, should the oboe be in this register or should it be where the flute is, you know, or should I switch them around? And he basically said, oh no, it should be fine in that lower register where it was, which is obviously contradictory to what Elliot said, right? So you've got Elliot, who's like a genius, who knows everything, saying, do it this way. And you've got the person who's actually going to be playing the instrument and plays the instrument professionally, like day in and day out, telling me to just leave it the original way. So it's like, damn it, what do I do now? But I left it the way that Elliot did it. And that was, work paid off in the end, I guess you could say, because, and his logic was really, really beautiful and clean as well. He said, the flute, where it is sitting in that higher register, it's not really going to be heard. Do you know what I mean? So it's not going to overpower anything. In fact, where it is, like if you switch that around, this register in the oboe.
What are you pointing at?
I'm pointing at the flute line, sorry, the top line in the whole orchestral piece. So that in played by the oboe will sound a little bit honkier and will sound stronger and will sort of be more prominent. And just that little piece of advice changed the entire sound of the opening for the better, because the oboe, if you don't use it properly, then it can work against you. Yeah, I would say that. And that's the nicest way I can say that the oboe can sound like crap to all the oboe players out there. And that's not an oboe thing, it's a composer thing.
Thank you.
At the time when I was writing this piece, I was thinking about my future and what I was going to do post-masters. This opportunity presented itself for me to work in my family's business, you know, which happened to be property development. I'm not a huge fan of the high-density apartments that are being built at the moment.
What's the problem with high-density apartment blocks?
There's not just one single problem. There are many different problems. One of them is that what they are constructing, a lot of it is purely profit-driven, and they're not actually thinking about, and when I say they, I mean the development groups when they get together and pour their money into a project or two or several, because they know the forecasts and they understand that Melbourne's going to reach, you know, 10 million people, they're saying now, by the year 2056 or something like that. And that's a lot of people.
I'm not quite so pessimistic about high density living myself.
Mm-hmm.
As I
want to hear the positive.
Well,
I don't really have the
high density living can be a problem when it's not adequately planned at the council level and at the state and federal level. However, it can also be the solution. You know, if we're going to have 10 million people, we're going to have to learn to live in an energy-efficient way. And that might mean something like a Hyperloop out to Bendigo, but it can also mean more efficient housing.
I know that I don't want to spend $500,000 on a studio apartment and have three kids. You know, it's just not going to work.
You're not afraid of smooth and beautiful textures in this piece, though. One of the wonderful things about it is that the strings seem almost absent or just like a background texture for most of it. We do have the lovely cello solo towards the beginning. But then moving on, it's only after about 8 minutes or so that the strings come out in this almost dawn-like shining chord. We can hear that rhythmic motif played by the strings again, but this time it's quite a positive sound. It's quite bright, tinged with dissonance, of course. But why all the optimism all of a sudden?
Tension and release. that's all it is.
So that doesn't depict a bright view for the future for you?
No, of course it does. Of course it does. You can't just live this life just dwelling on all the pessimism and all the negative things that you can see. I mean, of course there's hope. I'm not going to get too schmaltzy over here, but
though I feel like there is in this piece the sonic depiction of a housing market crash. Okay. I think you know the bit I'm talking about. I'll play it now. This happens moments before the sunshine. Are you trying to tell us that the demise of hundreds of thousands of investors' dreams is actually the birth of a new era for young people such as ourselves?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I see where you're hedging your bets. Maybe we'll finish just by listening to perhaps the hammer blows, perhaps the cement mixes, whatever it is, the immense movement and activity of this central section of Skyjammer. This sounds to me like your image of the city today, with every one of those brumps being a new block sprouting out of the earth and all of this busyness around it.
Busyness, yeah, you're right.
And maybe Daredevil moving through it.
Yeah.
Saving some people, beating some people up.
In my mind, I'm kind of you're walking along the street. I see a little girl, like, you know, youth, innocence, walking through this street, but she's like almost like from the past or something. So she's been brought to the future. And she's walking through the street and she sees these huge skyscrapers and it's all black, you know, sort of thing. And there's, you know, cars that are now flying, zooming past everywhere and all that. So it's very, I think we can all picture it because we've probably seen a movie or two that's got that sort of imagery. And she looks up and she cannot see, you know, the sky at all because, you know, there's no blue sky. It's just all neon lights and mold and, you know.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me today. Michael Bakanchev, composer, property developer, and filmmaker.
Thank you so much, Matthew Lorenzon and the ABC and the MSO.
Yeah, as well. Thank you very much again to the MSO and the ABC. You can read more reviews of contemporary music and listen to more podcasts at www.partialdurations.com and also at realtimearts.net.